News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
We're joined by John Walsh, the business editor and deputy editor of the Times Ireland edition. John, I want to explore with you, I suppose, like we know what happened with Anglo. We know what a disaster it was. But I want to explore, have we learned lessons and could it ensure that, can we ensure this will never happen again? Just before we do that, though, I suppose what this trial does do and the conviction does do and the previous convictions is it kind of nails the myth that you can never be convicted of white-collar crime in Ireland.
Oh, certainly. I mean, if you look at it by international standards, Ireland has done extremely well. In fact, I was reading an article last year about the rate of conviction in the US, and they said you should look at Ireland as a model of how to put bankers in jail. So that's a surprise for some of the commentary here, which seems to suggest that white-collar crime goes unpunished. It doesn't. It clearly doesn't. But I think the thing with Anglo, the interesting thing about yesterday's conviction, certainly some of the reaction to it would suggest that we've caught the culprit for the whole banking crisis. We didn't. What Drum was convicted of was this very specific crime at the end of the crisis.
This didn't cause the crash.
Absolutely
this
not.
This was them trying to.
And I mean, if you're looking for blame for the crash, it's much wider than a few bankers. It's too convenient to pin it on a few bankers. This was systemic. This was a massive bubble. And I think in years when we look back in it, the question will be, how could it have ever have happened? Because, I know it's an awful hackneyed cliche now that everybody partied. But if you look back to most of the noughties, a seminal moment in the banking crisis was the 2004 AIB AGM, when the AIB management team were nearly lynched by shareholders. And the reason why is because they weren't Anglo. They were looking at Anglo, they were looking at the returns, and they were saying, these guys are eating your lunch. Go after them. They did, with disastrous consequences.
They were seen as the role models, and all the other banks were basically following their lead.
Absolutely. When the property market took off, Anglo found its mojo. It was set up, I think it was in 1986. For the 15 years before the property market really took off, it was seen as, an also-ran, a marginal role. It was sneered at by Bank of Ireland and AIB. But when the property market took off, Anglo found its niche and it really found its mojo. It started, its exposure to the property sector was incredible. Looking back at it now, it broke all the rules of banking. Banking is supposed to be a conservative model. It's supposed to be, prudent management of finances. This was anything but. I mean, there's a couple of starting figures. When Seanan Fitzpatrick stood down as chairman or chief executive of Anglo Bank, Irish Bank, at the end of 2004, the total lending book was 24 billion. When David Drum stood down 4 years later, it was 73.2 billion. So in the space...
Trebled.
And this is during a period where the credit bubble was, at its most volatile.
I don't want to get bogged down in this, but just before we move on, the argument has been made, it's costing us 30 billion euros. It's a huge amount of money. It's a horrible amount of money that the state had to underpin. But there was no easy answers. There was no easy solutions once the bank was on the verge of collapse. And people who say, Anglo should have been allowed to go to the wall. We don't know what the consequences of that would be if we had let Anglo go to the wall.
I mean, it's an easy argument to make in hindsight. But unless you had the support of the ECB at the time, which we didn't, then the argument was, or what Brian Lenihan, the then finance minister, was looking at, was a potential systemic collapse of the banking system if you let one go, because the international view was Ireland was in a bad place. So if one bank went,
the whole lot could, the house of cards.
And that was the appalling vista he was looking at. By September 2008, it's very hard to come up with any sort of, without direct intervention from the ECB, it was very hard to see how the banking system could have been saved or what possible measures could have been introduced that would have eased the burden on the taxpayer. Okay, there could have been a direct bailout of the senior bondholders. But at the time, that was seen as a very risky move. It isn't now because, you know, we've a completely different regime.
Yeah. And the ECB would accept that now, whereas they weren't willing to accept it back then, the idea
of burning bond holders. And that was made very clear.
Could this happen again?
Very unlikely that it will happen anytime soon. I mean, there's been a huge change in the regulation landscape in the last decade. The most important one is that we now have EU Banking Union, which means that supervision of the banks has been transferred to the ECB. One of the big, I mean, there's been a couple of reports into the banking crisis, how it happened, the role of the regulator. There's two things we can say about the regulator. The legislation was incomplete, and the legislation that did exist wasn't particularly well enforced. There was a view that there was a very cozy relationship between the bankers and the regulators. That can't happen now because the regulators sit in Frankfurt and they're completely close-haired to local concerns. Secondly, we have much stricter rules around lending. Remember, in the noughties, it wasn't uncommon for people to go in and get a mortgage on 10 times their salary. The view was that the property market was going up, therefore it was a good investment, and that was your collateral, not realising that property prices could come down, and when they did, you were badly exposed. Whereas now, there are very, very strict mortgage lending rules, which contain the flow of credit from now on. And thirdly, there is this awful thing called a countercyclical capital buffer, which I think was mentioned on this programme last week.
Vincent Wall introduced that and gave us a headache when he introduced it.
But it is very important because the one thing, when I mentioned those figures there about Anglo's balance sheet growing at that pace, looking now, it's like, how was that possibly sustainable? It wasn't. But nobody said so at the time. Whereas now, with this measurement, there is a strict limit on how much balance sheets can grow every year. So that will reduce the amount of credit that can get into the economy.
So just to come in there, John, one of the things I took from the Anglo tapes, and I'm not a banker, I didn't understand that whole business, was what you just said there. Nobody saw the danger. Nobody was checking the altitude of the aircraft, and I use that analogy with the black box. Nobody was checking through, was there a fog ahead? What's the other side of it? That was what I took from you. Just touched it on it there. There was absolutely no fear because there was no knowledge of what could happen down the line. That's what was scary about the whole thing, I thought.
Well, I suppose the further you move away, and this is what we have to look out for in future, the further you move away from financial crises. We hadn't experienced a financial crisis or a credit bubble of this magnitude for decades, possibly since 1929. So there was no memory. There was no living memory of this. The prevailing view was light touch regulation. Bankers knew how to regulate themselves. Don't do anything that would stop the economy from performing at an optimal speed.
Vigilance is the order of the day going forward, to use that awful phrase going forward.
Super vigilance.
Okay. John Walsh, as ever, thanks indeed for joining us. John Walsh, business editor and deputy editor of the Times Ireland edition there.
News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.